A very Merry Christmas to everyone listening. Though, if you're listening to the initial broadcast of this episode, someone should probably drag you down and knock some sense into you with a large candy cane. Because, in my humble opinion, there are better things to be doing with the Christmas morning than listening to field notes. Frankly, I'm kind of hoping that no one is hearing these words and that you are instead engaged in spending time with your family today, which pretty much sums up what I'm doing right now. My Christmas morning will consist of opening presents with my wife and daughters and calling family in the lower 48 to share a little bit of the day with them. Later, during the middle parts of the afternoon, my house will play host to several friends and their families as we spend time together, celebrating the day for the meaning we attach to it, while enjoying a meal together and a whole lot of stories and laughs. It is my sincere hope that you yourself are engaged in similar such plans and are not actually listening to this program. However, if you do have the radio turned on, then I guess we had better get started. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Even though I have my own beliefs for why I celebrate Christmas, and the fact I have a federal job coupled with that whole separation of church and state stuff, which compels me to not go down that road on this show, the fact is Christmas has had a vast array of influences through the years that have come together to make it what it is today. For a lot of people, like me, Christmas is a sacred religious holiday, but it's also grown into a worldwide cultural and commercial phenomena. For over 2,000 years, people all over the globe have been observing it with traditions and practices that are both religious and secular in nature. Christians celebrate Christmas Day as the anniversary of the birth of Jesus of Nazareth, but there is also no historical doubt to the fact that its place on the calendar is tied to a Roman pagan festival called Saturnalia. Saturnalia was a holiday in honor of Saturn, the god of agriculture, and was celebrated in late December. When much of the ancient world came to embrace the Christian church, church leaders purposefully chose that time to celebrate Christmas in an attempt to get everybody on board with what the church was teaching. For those of us today, it really matters not what the historical beginnings entailed. December 25th is the only Christmas date we've ever known. For what it's worth, it's been a recognized federal holiday since 1870. Let's take a moment to consider some of the more contemporary cultural symbols that go with our modern-day Christmas. For example, how about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Seems like he's been around forever, doesn't it? Certainly he's been around for my entire life. Rudolph was actually a product of the mind of Robert L. May, a copywriter who wrote the poem in 1939. He penned the poem to help lure new customers into the Montgomery Ward department store. That's right, Rudolph was a marketing ploy. Also, Rudolph was originally supposed to be a moose, but it was decided that a reindeer was a warmer, friendlier image. For those of us who live around the Bristol Bay area, we know the truth. It would not matter which animal Rudolph is. They both taste great. Of course, in saying that, I'm mostly talking about caribou, not reindeer, right? So, what's the difference between a reindeer and a caribou? While there are some physical differences, such as cow reindeer typically have larger antlers than cow caribou, or reindeer bulls normally being a bit smaller than caribou bulls, the biggest difference is really pretty basic. It's just that reindeer are domesticated, and caribou aren't. Let's stay on the topic of Rudolph just a bit longer. Several years ago, I put forth what I thought was a pretty solid argument for why Rudolph could actually exist. You know, as a real animal and not just a marketing gimmick. Let's start with how a reindeer, or any ungulate for that matter, could have a glowing nose. The full name is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, so first we have to account for the nose color. That's really pretty simple to do. Clearly, Rudolph is an albino reindeer. I can find no actual printed reference that states Rudolph has a normal brown coat of fur, only that his nose is red and glows. It's a fact that albino reindeer do exist. Go ahead and Google it. And an albino reindeer's nose is pink, close enough to make the connection to red. So, how does it glow? Again, the answer's not all that hard to get at. If you'll think back to high school biology, we know that mutations occur in nature. We also know that a mutation is a change in the DNA sequence within a chromosome or gene of an organism that results in the creation of a new characteristic or trait. Mutations can be inherited or they can occur after conception and be caused by any number of factors. This type of mutation is called a somatic mutation. We also know that some organisms can produce their own light. This is called bioluminescence. In bioluminescent animals, chemical compounds mix together to produce a glow. It's the same way substances inside a light stick combine to make light. From my own childhood, the best example of this would be the fireflies we tried to catch in the summer. Whole yards and fields would be lit up with the blinking glow of these amazing insects. In the case of Rudolph, my theory is that he's a mutated albino reindeer and that his nose has mutated in such a way that it's capable of bioluminescence. And there you have it. Or, for you British fans, Bob's your uncle. It's amazing how easy it is to figure these things out, if you just give it a bit of thought. And short of a necropsy on the actual Rudolph, I think my theory sounds as plausible as it's going to get. Now let's talk a bit about that fat man who's indebted to Rudolph for the service he provides. Santa Claus. Santa is a guy I can get behind. Why is that, you say? Because he's a bearded fat man, who's still in pretty good shape despite his age, who's likely on a high-protein diet, and he has an extremely benevolent nature. I mean, what's not to like? In fact, I'd go so far as to say that he's an excellent role model, and for all of the reasons given. And just why do I suppose those facts I listed about him? He clearly has a lot of years under his ample belt, and yet he seems to stay in pretty good shape, despite the girth that belt of his encircles. Because his abode is purportedly in a far north location, I'd argue that the bulk of his diet is protein-based, due to that location, and that he has a hard time scoring fresh fruits and vegetables. Though I'll admit I don't know how far north the influence of Full Circle Farms or others like them reaches. So, let's now use those assumptions to put together a picture of just who this man is. Santa is an older individual. He appears to have issues with his weight, like many of us, but he still leads a very active lifestyle. He is able to pull this off while sticking to a diet that's heavy on meats and sweets. And he sports a first-class beard. If that's not inspirational, I don't know what is. It's possible some of our area's physicians will wind up calling KDLG to protest my support of lifestyles such as this, or maybe some of those doctors are in the same boat and can also draw inspiration from jolly old St. Nick. I also think perhaps Santa is something of an outdoorsman, beyond his annual global flight to deliver gifts throughout the world. Why do I say that? Actually, in large part due to that very same global flight. Can you imagine the vast range of weather conditions he encounters on a typical flight? Because he successfully makes that flight each year, that tells me he's properly dressed for the occasion, which is something that's commonplace amongst savvy outdoorsmen. I'd be willing to bet that his suit is a top-of-the-line fabric, such as an expedition-weight polar fleece for warmth, but layered with a windstopper lining and Gore-Tex to ward off precipitation. That certainly would help with the perils of high-altitude flying. It's possible he has an exterior layer for the flights that the public does not see, something that combines the impervious but flexible nature of a Helly Hansen Impertech-type material with the latest in synthetic insulations. I also think the choice of red and white as colors is partially for the sake of safety, whereas Christmas happens over a great many hunting seasons in many places. He wouldn't want to wear blaze orange, for fear the reindeer would frighten thinking he's a hunter, or safety green, either, lest he be mistaken for an airport worker. No, red and white seem like well-thought-out compromises. I'm further betting if we could get a good look at his game-time boots, we'd find out that they are really black, knee-high Arctic-type muck boots, which simply can't be beat for cold-weather outdoor activities. Furthermore, both his navigational and communication skills are quite good, and he understands all-terrain vehicles. For these reasons, I am convinced that Santa is an avid outdoorsman. Let me go ahead and close today with a wee bit of Christmas trivia. Maybe you can use a few of these to win a few Christmas Day bets with friends and family. Each year, up to 35 million real Christmas trees are sold in the U.S. alone. There are, and I kid you not, 21,000 Christmas tree growers in the United States. During the mid-1600s, due to Puritan beliefs about Christmas, the celebration of it was outlawed in Boston. Lawbreakers were fined 5 shillings. On a Santa-related note, the Salvation Army has been sending out Santa Claus-clad donation collectors into our country's streets since the 1890s. Germans are credited with making the first artificial Christmas trees, which were made out of dyed goose feathers. Each year, more than 3 billion Christmas cards are sent in the U.S. alone. Alabama was the first state in the Union to officially recognize Christmas, doing so in 1836. And one final fact. You might want to rethink kissing under mistletoe. Mistletoe is actually a parasitic plant. The name mistletoe means little dung twig, because the plant is spread through bird droppings. Well, I'm out of here, and you should be too, if you're listening at all. KDLG will survive just fine without you this once. Honest. Merry Christmas, everyone. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.